How can you find, fund, and fix planet-sized problems? First, you need to be informed. And that starts here with the DOI Podcast.
Well, welcome in, everybody. 6/22/22, Wednesday, show number 60, if you're keeping track. Welcome into the most meaningful crypto conversation on the interwebs this evening. And that's because it involves you. You've made it to the DOI Podcast. We've got some news tonight. Hey, how about Chinese courts upholding a crypto sale? Yep. Jim Hines, congressman, puts forth a white paper for the U.S. digital dollar. We're going to talk a little bit about Dow Planet NYC coming up. We're going to do it together. Corey Fico, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, man, I'm doing fantastic, Phil. I have to say, with those inspirational pump soundtracks before each one of these podcasts, I feel like I'm going to go work out.
Get you fired up, doesn't it?
Yeah, for a moment, I'm like, are you going to work out or are you not? I'm like, ooh, I'm going to do it. And then we do a podcast and then I don't.
You know, but believe it or not, it doesn't even give me the inclination to go work out. Not at all.
Oh, I don't know. I'm pretty amped up by the time the podcast starts. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoy doing those.
Yeah, it's got a nice feel to it. They've definitely got very, like, I feel like I'm going to go win a football game or something.
Well, hey, and for music, I was going to put a little Tennessee music in there because tonight we are on the road on our way up to Dow Planet NYC. Kicks off on the 24th and 25th. So if anybody's going to be up there or you'd like to make your way up there, come and check us out. Tonight we have B-Man Jay in the mobile studio with us. What's up, B-Man?
Not much. Loving being here.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in and sitting at the big round table with us. We got producer Ethan hanging out here ready to go. And Malcolm 2.0 is going to be stopping by fashionably late like a superstar is.
Yeah, it looks like Malcolm's got his hand up. Should we do, like, bring him in, or is he going to come in to meet you in the Tennessee studio?
I don't know. I guess you could bring him up. I don't know. He said he'd be here in a few minutes. But you know what? Let's bring him up. Malcolm, what's up?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you? This would give my opportunity to etch my negotiator flash into the DOI Foundation. You know, you remember the old school whenever the negotiator was on his phone on the way to negotiate the truce there in that movie. So this is my opportunity to etch that into the DOI lore as I go to meet Phil Ward and producer Ethan and the B-Man Jay again.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, I like. We should create a book with all the DOI lore at this point in time.
Well,
I feel like we'd probably be at least a couple chapters in. It's been a pretty interesting ride in the short period of time that we've been, this last year that we've been at the DOI, huh? Yeah,
sounds like you're trying to challenge Harry Potter.
Whoa, that would be.
I didn't set the bar too high, did I?
No, I mean, not too high at all. Let's just try to overpower based off of lore, the best-selling children's book of all time.
Yeah.
But crypto, every kid, they love crypto. We'll turn it into, like, crypto magic, except for, like, we'll explain in detail exactly how the minting process works. Page after page after page, it'll be just like they're going to Hogwarts, except for going to technical school for coding.
This doesn't sound very exciting to me. I'm going to be playing volleyball in the metaverse.
Hey, maybe you already are.
It could all be a simulation, folks. So, Corey, let's jump into a couple news stories. We're also going to talk a little bit, hopefully, about Dow Planet that is happening on the 24th and 25th, Friday and Saturday. That's going to be exciting. You looking forward to it?
I am looking forward to it. I think I couldn't think of a better time for this conference, this meeting of the minds for influential, the players in the DAO space, the thinkers, the doers, the investors of DAO projects to get together after this whole, let's just call it dip, if not outright crash. Well,
right.
A pretty heavy crypto dip.
Slamming the brakes on.
Yeah, I would say it's like if you slam the brakes on one of those drag cars, you threw the parachute but you didn't mean to hit the brakes. So you're kind of like swerving all over the place, right. Like 300 to 60 miles an hour in like two seconds.
Just waiting on it to settle down.
Yeah, waiting for that parachute to rip because there's just too much force, and you get back up to 300 miles again. But that said, yeah, I think this is a beautiful time for everyone to get together, and I'm very excited about being in New York here in a couple days.
Yeah. Yep, looking forward to it. The Dow Planet NYC team is already scurrying the streets. They've got people out moving around, giving out flyers, and bringing some more awareness to it. So good luck on that, gentlemen. And we'll see you up there in a day or so. Corey, let's jump in real quick to the first story. We've got Congressman Jim Hines. You know, he has put out a round of applause. He has put out basically a white paper, right? And on the U.S. digital dollar, whether or not this will be the accepted version or that will get rehashed. You know, most of the time when anything is presented like this, it comes in, a larger body looks at it, starts picking it apart, says what they don't like, what they need. You know, so that might look a little different in the outcome. But, hey, this is some forward movement on at least for us to see in writing what they're thinking.
Yeah, I think no matter what your perspective is, and you could easily have countless perspectives on CBDCs, and you probably should have some opinion, at least after listening to it for a while, one way or the other. I think it's beautiful that we're actually getting some clear definition from our politicians mm-hmm. on what they think and why.
Yeah.
And in general, I feel like it's almost like I should see a white paper for everything that they think. I mean, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, it sounds simplistic, but I feel like there are most things that are either one of two scenarios. Either A, it's verbalized without anything to back it up, or B, it is articulated and written down painstakingly into 3,500 words.
Right. Right. Or 3,500
pages.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say 3,500 words. That's a light read.
Yeah.
You know,
3,500 pages.
Yeah, getting all their thoughts on down on paper, that's like a tapestry of nightmares, though. I don't know if we want to read into all of that or know all of that.
So something that I was really excited to see specifically is that in the white paper, it highlights that CBDC could present a novel and serious privacy, some novel and serious privacy challenges. So
sure.
I like the fact that that's being brought to the forefront as it gets closer coming to fruition.
Yeah. I mean, what are some of the biggest problems you could foresee with that?
Ooh.
I mean, what problems can arise with all of us being digitally connected to the Federal Reserve in that way?
Oh my gosh. I would say you could be social credit scored into, I mean, it's going to sound a bit extreme, but essentially out of the economy. You could make it work.
Yeah.
You could make it to where if you didn't agree with the political whims of that moment in time, you could turn that into some. Think of it like the McCarthy era, except for instead of being investigated for whether or not you were a communist, which by the way is a real thing in the McCarthy era in the 1960s in the United States.
Oh, I thought you were saying communists are a real thing because they are also a real thing.
Well, I mean, yes, they are also real too. Yeah. But during the McCarthy era, if they would have had the capacity to employ the tactics mm-hmm. to make it impossible for you to sell anything, to buy anything, for
sure.
you to get access to your money, to track every single thing that you did, and to be able to use that to build court cases against you, to put you in prison. The list goes on and on. They would have done it.
Hey, you don't have to look back that far in history. You can just look back to the Patriot Act.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? If they had that ability then, they'd have snuck that right in there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think at that point in time, they would have tracked everything because they already are, if you believe Snowden and Julian Assange.
Clearly, we don't. Clearly, that's not our opinion.
Clearly, that's not our opinion. But if you believe them, then those things are already being tracked. But I think the difference is now they can be controlled. Because unlike paper dollar, which is why people who launder money really like the U.S. dollar, because it's easy to get in and out of other countries and to bring in or out dirty gold or whatever it might be. It's a fantastic use case for that. Whereas this you know, a CBDC is not going to be.
No.
At all.
No, and that's the real problem. Oh, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole tonight. I'm in a good mood, Corey. Let's don't go too far down the CBDC rabbit hole.
But it could be beautiful to that point as well, like what I just mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think the difference is whether or not politicians are having open discussions with white papers and they're discussing the merit of these kinds of things, right, about whether or not you have rights to your own personal data. If a government should know everything about you or just some things about you, and when that begins and ends.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are clearly times where we want the government to know things about its citizens, sure, because that helps to protect us collectively. And there are clearly times where we think that we should have some wall of privacy. Well, when are those different times?
Yeah. Well, tricky conversation, right? I mean, it is the balance as old as time. So we're not going to solve it tonight. But another problem has been solved. U.S. governor signs bill allowing Louisiana banks to basically take custody of Bitcoin and crypto for customers and hold them as digital assets. And that's a big step forward, right? Now, my question will be, you know, banks are not, a lot of times banks will start laws. You know, if we look at other examples where you've got medical marijuana is available in some states and not in others, right? But federally, it's illegal. So this doesn't exactly take full force and effect, I don't think, if the federal government doesn't also sanction it, because aren't all of these banks, or at least the vast majority, controlled by federal law, not state law?
Well, they're definitely under the purview of different things, such as we talked about it in a previous podcast, like the FDIC insurance. Mm-hmm. I doubt that this would be under the umbrella of the FDIC insured. Just because a bank has custody of it, is storing your Bitcoin or your digital assets, sure, they may have some other kind of insurance protections, but it'd have to be secondary market. It'd mm-hmm. have to be the bank partnered with some kind of, you know, insurance firm, Moody's or whatever it might be,
sure,
and have to partner with them in order to provide some insurance on theft or destruction. Like, let's say they have custody, but it's in a server farm that gets burned down or something like that. Yeah. Or you don't have any protection. But I doubt that a bank would want to take that on without minimizing their own liability. So whether it's insurance, securities, having a security team or some combination thereof, I'm pretty sure that whatever banks jump into this, they're going to have to bridge that gap in between here and a FDIC insured product.
Sure. Well, could it be only cold storage?
Well, right? It could. And I would imagine that it would be. Well, okay. So cold storage is hard from a logistics standpoint. Hot storage is a lot easier logistically to mm-hmm. be able to move things. Transfer things around a wallet to jump into something and say, yes, it's yours. Let me move it over. No, that wasn't a transaction. Oh, you didn't mean to swipe twice at the gas station.
Right.
That kind of thing. I feel like it'd have to be hot or at least warm.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to cold, right. unless something just basically changes back and forth and they just use fiat or CBDCs and sure. they almost do like a tally system, like a counting system in the back that just kind of say how much of your Bitcoin is or isn't yours whenever it's all said and done and they get access to it again. But I tend to think that it'd be hot stored.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would at least have to be in warm storage, right? To be able to have access to it on both sides. You know, would that be just the you know, they're just going to hold it as an asset. I don't think they're using it to collateralize loans. In this article or in this ruling, but just being
but that
able
is
to
the
hold
next
it,
step.
That is right. Because once you've got an asset in there, why wouldn't you?
Well, exactly. And that's the move you would want to make as a bank, is you'd want to be able to put more assets under management and you'd want to be able to collateralize those assets. And if you're a bank, where you really make your money is you'd want to be able to leverage those assets in the market.
Sure. 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 Yeah, very interesting. And it opens up a nice door, kind of kicks it open, right? Because it seems that as soon as one of these legal precedents is set, it makes it that much easier for the next state, if they're interested in doing the same thing, makes it that much easier to make it through since one state's done it. and they'll start testing it, you know, presumably right away, and find weaknesses or any problems, and that's, you think that's going to open up kind of all over the place.
Yeah. So for those keeping track, the governor of Louisiana is John Bel Edwards, and he did actually sign the bill, according to crypto analyst Dennis Porter, on June 21st. Yeah. So I know some of these conversations, some of those little finer details don't, in case you're keeping track of names, you might want to know that, because perhaps maybe this Mr. Edwards here, or Mr. Bel Edwards, will want to be somebody we keep on our radar.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he seems like, he seems like at least a proponent for it. So that's good. You see some places that are fighting it. It really doesn't seem, like the United States is fighting it very much, right? We see a little bit here and there, but it seems like they understand the writing is on the wall, and now they're just trying to figure out how to make sense of it.
So another one actually that was presented, so the bill was actually brought forward, was sponsored by Louisiana State Representative Mark Wright. And it was also supported by the Pelican Center for Technology and Innovation. Well, another thing that Wright has apparently brought forward, which I think is pretty interesting, is a crypto-friendly bill called Number 1010, which would allow the creation of deregulated industrial power zones in the state of Louisiana. I'll let you pause on that one for a second.
Power zones, meaning like we're going to hold all the power in the county in this area, or power zones as in power stations?
So the way I perceive it is the deregulated industrial power zone is to say that there is a power zone that's industrial size, so kind of like large scale power zone. Think like the kind of power zones that might power cities or a number of different factories, like large industrial scale power.
Right.
And to have it, deregulated like this, I imagine that what they're trying to do is allow it to be maybe even decentralized, mm-hmm. or at the very minimum to be able to be used as crypto mining or for the benefits of crypto.
Okay.
So it doesn't specify in here. So it does say that it would designate a tract of land within a parish as a power zone. And so that would allow them to make it attractive for in Louisiana to be a Bitcoin miner. So I tend to think what I would be really excited to see is if we could not only be, I'm not really for deregulated per se, but let's say less regulated and decentralized. That would be cool, as if it were like a collectively owned, like it were a Louisiana Dow power zone, like it's power zone 5 Dow owned by the people of that area. And there could basically be a wallet that basically there's a gate, they could have a gated where only people in that community would have the ability to purchase that token, which would give them access to governance of how that power zone would work, at least to vote on certain things that are pushed down to them, and also to be able to reap rewards from the power zone that was put into that part of their community.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. Well, little time will tell, but the Louisiana, their legal system there is a little bit different than everywhere else. So we'll see how it works through there. But before we move on, Mr. Malcolm 2.0 has joined us at the DOI roundtable this evening. How are you doing, Malcolm?
Thank you for having us this evening. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys coming out and joining us. And how are you doing?
Harper, how are you doing this evening?
Malcolm has got his daughter with him, Harper, so it's good to see you too.
Absolutely.
The shy one.
Harper?
Momentarily.
Just for a moment. Yeah. So let's jump in here. This is something that I thought was interesting, Corey, that this came out of China of all places, right? Chinese court validates a 2019 car sale using what is now a worthless crypto coin. And so it was in some project. I didn't look through to get the name of it, but this is a big deal. Right, because it basically kind of upholds what we already understand, right? That it's basically contract law, right? So they made an agreement under that day's conditions, and the fact that it is worthless today, the Chinese court saying, "Yeah, well, you still owe it." So That, to me, lends more to what they actually believe with cryptos, right? That they do have value and that they are going to be used as a means of payment for this kind of thing. And for them to validate it, I think is a big deal, especially coming from China.
It's interesting because I can see your perspective, but I also get an alternative perspective in that they're saying that if the value of something shifts, then you can go back. You know, if you can go in a future date and go back to a previous contract and say, oh, well, you sold me that house with Ethereum, but Ethereum's gone down in value by 50%. Therefore, I want my house back.
Hold on, then I totally misread the article. Right? Is that what you're saying? Is that the ruling of the court was that they owed more on top of it?
Yeah, let me jump into this. So at the time of the buyer identified only as Mr. Huang, signed a sales contract to purchase a 2009 AL6 for $59,477 in exchange for 1,281 Unihash tokens with an undisclosed car dealership in Shanghai. For the contract, the seller was to deliver the car to Wang within 3 months' time. Ooh, okay, that's interesting, 3 months' time. According to Shanghai Mengxian Court, Mr. Huang paid the Unihash on the date of the contract signing, but did not receive the car within the specified duration or afterwards. As a result, Mr. Wang took the seller to court, demanding the vehicle and the payment of that 0.66% daily. Let's see, damages. The court took over 3 years before the verdict was reached, citing regulations that evolved into what is now China's cryptocurrency ban. Let's see here. The buyer was neither granted damages, delivery of the car, nor a refund of his 1,281 Unihash. So yeah, ouch. Exactly what I was just thinking there. So the buyer did not get their Unihash tokens back. They did not get the car, and they did not get damages.
Ouch. Well, yeah. We do see one commonality there between Chinese and U.S. courts. It took 3 years for an opinion.
Yeah, as it does.
I mean, you think you could move that through the red court a little faster than that.
Whew. Well, so to that point, though, let's pause on that for just a second. That's pretty concerning to me, is that essentially the only kind of contract that I would accept in China is one that is facilitated instantly, right? One that where the transaction happens and it's done. I give you Unihash tokens, you give me the vehicle, we're done. Both sides of the transaction have been cleared. Because regardless of what happened to the Unihash token, in my mind, the purchaser of the vehicle didn't have the Unihash token to be able and do anything with it in the markets. Like, should they choose to get out of the Unihash and move over into Uniswap?
Sure.
They didn't have any way to do anything with that. And the entire time during that 3 months, whatever you might think of the dealership, like, I don't think that they took custody of that money the way that they should have. Or that asset, I should say. Because, I mean, at some point in time, if they thought that they weren't going to accept it as payment, then they should have reimbursed.
Sure. Well, in being worthless, you would think that they would, right? If it's lost its value, unless it comes back up, and then they win on both sides, right?
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine that?
I can. I can imagine over that. If we move on just one story down, this is why China's, I don't know how to say that. Let's go with a Guizhou province. To slap backdated power charges on undercover crypto miners. You heard that. Backdated. They're going to bump their rates up and charge them an inflated rate going back for anything that they uncover with legal crypto miners. So they're clamping down hard.
Ooh, yeah. They are not being friendly with crypto.
No.
At all.
Well, you've got to imagine that's because they're going to require everybody to use their CBDC. I mean, China's not going to allow anything except total compliance.
Yeah. You can, no matter what you say about other governments, this is actually a really interesting line in a book I was listening to. It was by the people who wrote Super Freakonomics, and it's essentially the book was about blog posts that they had made. And they asked a question about people to create, I think it was six words on how to describe the American government or America. And if I recall correctly, is our critics choose to stay. So And
yeah, that's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yeah. Our worst critics choose to stay. Yeah, that's what it was. Our worst critics choose to stay. And I think there's a lot to that, because you have the opportunity to criticize because you have a government that's not just going to, like, hammer you, like, to the ground. You're like,
sure.
Like, oh, okay. So you went past this whole Bitcoin mining ban, and we're not only are we going to hit you with whatever other charges, we're going to backdate retroactive increased electricity charges all the way back.
Sure, till whenever they say that you started it.
To whenever they say you started, to whatever amount of energy they say you've used.
Dan, that's going to be brutal. Well, you would think that that's going to get some action on shutting them down, right? On compliance.
Well, you would think so, but right, it says in January, China controlled 21.1% of the global Bitcoin hash rate. So what that means is that over one-fifth of Bitcoin's mining is happening in an area where that government is just waiting to find you and, like, drive that spike straight into the ground.
Damn, that's a lot for a country that can't even use it, right?
Yeah, not legally.
Yeah, well, when you don't, you know, when you're building these mining rigs, they're all coming from over there anyways, right? So they're probably, you would think that that would be readily available on the black market over there. So it would be, it would kind of be something that would be easier. Like for us, it might be actually a little harder for us to get our hands on that kind of stuff and no one know. But over there, I think that might be a little bit easier. And that's why you see so much of that happening. And there's not very many other opportunities, right? Because you, whatever you're going to do, whatever money you're going to make, you have to make it in the kind of the cover of dark in your own home, or it's all going to be taken.
Well, that's true. But if you've looked at in the last couple of years, which, by the way, has been very well supported by the makers of TikTok, for those of you who don't know, something that has been supported very heavily is facial recognition. And you know the whole, like, all those social media facial recognition challenges and that kind of stuff. Well, the government of China has been working on it for years, and they have cameras placed all over many of their metropolitan areas, and now even rural areas, where that will automatically recognize your face and track what you're doing, when you're doing it, where you're doing it, etc. And quite frankly, if you're China, you're waiting for the CBDC to happen, you could just social score that right in, and you can essentially lock people in or out of the economy. So I wouldn't feel confident enough to do anything black market. Not that I would want to do that anyway, but point being is, if I had a propensity to, I definitely wouldn't have a propensity to in China. Not now.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, sometimes when you think about what's going on over there, my heart really goes out to the people that live in there, because, you know, even though you get accustomed to doing one thing, right? And when you're raised in a situation, normal is what normal is, right? This is normal. So it's, you know, kind of we project, or I'll speak for myself, at least I would project onto them what I would think being in the same situation. But I do truly believe that there is a spark that lives on the side inside of every man and woman that wants to be free. And so even if they don't know freedom as their reality, or total freedom, or the level of freedom that we enjoy, I still know that on the inside of them there is that spark to be free. And that makes me feel really bad for them.
Yeah, I think that that's a complicated conversation there, because I could definitely appreciate what you're saying, and I don't want to detract from it at all, clearly. Mm-hmm. I know you know that, Phil, but for anybody who doesn't know me well enough to know that, that's of my opinion, and that's a world I would want to curate. But there is something to be said, historically speaking, for thousands of years, that culture has always been, or more often than not, been driven around the we, not the I.
Sure.
And they also have, historically speaking, sought out strong leaders to make the decisions,
right,
and have thought that that is a far better way of ruling the people, even if that meant self-sacrifice, and even to the point of extreme self-sacrifice, and your honor was how you obeyed the rules of the leaders, which have always been a selected few.
Right.
And that's been thousands of years. Now, we've got this sense of, like, rugged individualism, at least us as Americans, and I think that there's a lot of power to it. I personally would not want to give it up. So if you're speaking about,
no doubt.
I'm speaking about myself. I do think that there are some beauty in being able to think about yourself as a community, as one thing, as like we collectively are a whole, as opposed to I'm a whole and whatever works for me. And then I got to make, you know, all the other systems got to force me to play within the rules with everyone else, play within the box with everyone else. But at the same time, it's clearly also been, if you look at art, you look at culture, you look at innovation, creativity, it seems like whenever we work with one another, but we have our own sense of self and our own sense of kind of open autonomy and freedom, that seems to be the way that things work more often than not. But that said, you know, like all things, governance, probably they adapt different, you and I talked about this previously, they adapt to different situations better. So different things will probably, you know, do better at different times. But I wouldn't choose it. Let's just say that I wouldn't choose, if you gave me the choice, I wouldn't want to walk down a city street with 80 cameras scanning my face.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like that much fun.
No. If we go back to the 21% of the crypto mining is done over in China, if they actually cut all that out, what's that going to do to the blockchain and the transfer of all these different things?
Like the hash rate? Like how?
Yeah, the hash rate's just going to be horrible because all these other computers are going to have to be picking up on that. Because if you take out 20% of the computers worldwide, that's really going to make everything else harder.
Sure.
And I mean, it might be worthwhile to get back into crypto mining.
Yeah.
If they actually go into that and they take it all away, if they can actually control that as well as they think they can.
So, Corey, what's your thought on that? Do you think that the market would just see the hole that has been created by the loss of Chinese computers in it, and they would just compensate and start working those? Or would it slow everything down?
I do think that because it's a market with a steady flow of income.
I muted the mics, but
that'd be very easy for people to see opportunities. Like 2 inches. Like if there was a vacuum.
Come up about 2 inches.
To just step in and fill it. And now people would get creative. I'm sure they would. And they would also give opportunities for existing companies to scale up their resources, you know, some of which are publicly traded U.S. firms. So I'm sure that they'd be able to scale up their resources. And I'm sure right now there are people that are turning off or turning on capacity as it makes sense, kind of the same way that you do with the power grid. Is you just adapt to the time of day when it's the most financially viable to mine. You want to follow those up and down cycles. And I'm sure that I would think that they could adapt to that, but I would bet, to what Jay was bringing up, I would bet there would have to be some impact though. It wouldn't be a zero impact type of thing. Now, I do think that that would be a conversation in and of itself, or actually enough. I think that that would be something worth digging into.
Yeah,
because we might have to live that future
with China going offline like that.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't think that 20% would do it, but when you're talking about a system that all works together, right, and is all connected together, a 20% drop is a lot. So I wonder how fast the world can adjust to that. I mean, certainly, though, China's not going to be able to flip the switch, right? It's already illegal, and 20% of it's being done. My gosh, imagine what would happen if they turned it on and made it legal and just started taxing it like every other country, right? Like, why not put your industrious people to work? Like, why would China hold it out, even if they were only able to use it and collect it and use it as an asset but not as a currency, and they were to put the digital yuan in or whatever they're putting in? You would think that you'd just let them go with it and to create and generate all that revenue.
It almost puts you into a digital powerhouse in a hurry if you took those mines collectively. You could be a digital powerhouse in a hurry in that space if it was used correctly.
They would go from 21% up to 35% or more if that was legal.
Yeah.
Well, I think because that's something to think about, and clearly they've thought about it. So there are a number of things that I could say arguments for China doing that if you were China making those moves. I think to play the opposite perspective, the reason why China wouldn't is because they don't want to undermine the power of them trying to take over the global reserve currency through their CBDC. And by validating Bitcoin, sure, they are taking away the power of the digital yuan, so the RMB.
Yeah,
so,
but
and
man, the energy grid may not be able to handle it, and that may be why they're afraid of this. Because if they actually make it legal, it's going to take up a lot of their energy, and they just may not be able to handle that energy loss.
Yeah.
And that could be it right there, too. So for those who don't know, Australia and China are having a back and forth about coal. So there's a big to-do, if you will, about how they're going to get enough energy to sustain their power grid. And they use, whenever you look at a metric of how much power a country uses, China is by far surpasses every other country, including the United States, by like many orders. Like,
well, Corey, at least they capture all of their carbon, and they're leaving, you know, they're taking care of their carbon footprint in making the world a better place without pollution and all of these things. They're doing their part, right?
Well, I guess
sorry for the loaded question.
yeah, that's gotta love it. So speaking of something you gotta love, that's the wallet that helped trigger the UST, you know, the US Tether, or the implosion linked by the analysis firm, the US Terra, the Terra developer.
Mm-hmm.
It has been linked back to the project.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. So a South Korean blockchain analysis firm suggests that the death spiral sparked by transactions from a wallet linked to the lead Terra developer, though any motivation or rationale remains a mystery. So to dive into that just a tad to give some of the nuance here.
Is it really hard to figure out the motive?
I mean, usually it's money.
Yeah. it seems like it, unless someone was just trying to be malicious, and that was, you know, that's what excited them, was to just tear stuff up. It seems like the motive is going to be money for that. And wow, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. So blockchain data shows that wallet A, as it's called, swapped over 85 million UST for another dollar linked stablecoin USDC on May 7th, just minutes after the Terraform removed over 150 million USD from a liquidity pool on the lending platform Curve in a planned move. So what happened is the 150 million USD were planned to be removed from the liquidity pool, and just minutes before, so hang on just a second, so 85 million, just minutes after, so just minutes after that 85 million was swapped out for USDC, and prices of the UST fell under a dollar almost immediately following these trades, which was said to be as a result of the lower liquidity on the Curve pool. So meanwhile, Wallet A's newly acquired USDC was sent to Coinbase, one of the biggest crypto exchanges by trading volume. And there's still no telling what happened to the funds transferred to these Binance. Apparently, they're also sent to Binance. These Binance and Coinbase wallets, whether they're still there or they have been transferred up somewhere else.
Well, how can they not see if they're not still there?
Well, that said, you probably could tumble it up pretty hard and heavy, but that is a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that's going to
be a wall, I would guess, at this point in time.
Sure, but you would think that that's going to be discovered eventually, right? Because someone's going to dig in it and do a forensic analysis on it and get deep into it. And just like they connected this, oh, that's not good news at all.
Yeah, it's not good news at all. So I'm looking through here to see if there's any more news on what happened after it went to Coinbase. No, there isn't.
Now, you have to wonder who's going to jail. Right, like is something actually going to be done with this? Because that's a huge, that was a devastating blow to a lot of people. And you have to wonder, if they find culpability, are they actually going to do something about it?
Well, as I've made the stance before, projects fail, and it's tough to say what happened here with Luna, but this isn't very promising evidence. So,
no.
I would be curious to see, whenever it's not just a news headline and we dig further into it in the coming days, weeks, and months, because I'm sure we will, and we get more and more nuance to the information here, exactly what it all means. Like, clearly Wallet A, because it goes further on in this article to show that Wallet A, they were able to attach it back to the main project because they saw that it bounced transactions back and forth in a coordinated effort with the LFG, the Luna. So they clearly were in concert with one another, but what that means and where the money's at and who's held accountable for that, and also too, because they moved it to USDC, that to me says a lot. So that alone, so let's take away everything else from the equation that we don't know. Here's what we know. Somebody thought minutes after the 150 was removed, 150 billion UST, that they should swap out the 85 million UST before the prices fell to USDC, which is another stablecoin. So they weren't even trying to make any other move but to try to get out of the 85 million worth of UST. So no matter who they were, whether they were just one of the lead devs with access to these funds, which clearly they work in concert, so I don't think that they did it outside of the awareness of the rest of the community, or they were upper management, they made the conscious decision that the stable coin that we've pegged needs to be, we need to mitigate our risk and get out of it and go to something else. And that, to me, notifies that they were cognizant of what was going to happen,
yeah,
or what could happen.
Of course.
And they didn't communicate it.
1 minute after?
Yeah, minutes after, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to move unless you have a good reason to do it.
Yeah, and if you are going to do it in that way, are you responsible for telling the rest of the community that you're already trying to escape the risk of the asset that you have?
Well, that's a good point, right? You do bring up a good point, but I think when you find yourself in the position of the developer and the leader of it, I think maybe it changes your position, which changes your obligation in my mind.
Yeah.
That's not really even insider trading, is it? I mean, if they're doing it for themselves, that's tough. That's tough. You wonder, you would like to think that, you know, idea that blockchain allows that kind of deep forensic analysis, you would like to think that something will actually come out of this, even if it takes some time, but that you'll be able to answer questions and look backwards to it, because isn't that where the promise of security comes from, is that you can't do things so hidden, but then at the same time, if you run them through tumblers and that, then everything gets hidden.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, oh man, that's a shame, because every time you see this, it's like it's going to be what brings on some of the stiffest regulations.
Well, to that point, speaking of regulations, one of the things I know you and I have talked about quite a bit is the carbon credits.
Oh yeah. Making Al Gore happy saying that. I think you may need to pay Al Gore something just for saying carbon credits out loud on the air.
I tend to think that it happens automatically. I think a portion gets taken out of my taxes.
Yes.
Okay. And they just keep track.
Don't give that. You just gave blanket permission. we will be much obliged.
Yeah, which, by the way, I actually applaud the way that this is being moved forward in the Web3 space, and also to a ClimaDAO, which I've had the opportunity to talk to the team over there, which, to give a little bit of background to the story, Polygon claims they've achieved carbon neutrality. And the way that they've done that, in a collab with ClimaDAO, the Polygon ecosystem has retired 400,000 in carbon credits, offset greenhouse gas emissions. So in that way, ClimaDAO, I actually do have a lot of respect for, because they don't have this like secondary carbon credit market where it gets jacked up to these crazy rates and there's like middlemen making a ton of money off of it. And it's all, of course, something that you can track on the blockchain, which is, I applaud that. It's the best way if you're going to go about using the concept of carbon credits. So,
well, Corey, about it. Hold on. I think I need you to explain this just a little bit more to me, if you don't mind. So they say the Poly ecosystem retired 400,000 in carbon credits. 400,000 of what? 400,000 worth of US dollar in carbon credits?
Yeah, so 400,000 USD is the way that I'm interpreting this.
Where did they retire them to?
So essentially you buy out the carbon credits as a way to offset the greenhouse gases that you use. And then of course, whenever you have these carbon credits, the concept is that you're paying for the carbon credits, the carbon that you produce, that you put into the environment, which then can be offset by carbon reducing efforts. So you kind of this a balancing mechanism for those who exceed or can't become carbon neutral themselves as they offset by purchasing.
Where are these carbon credits made? I think B-Man is wanting to jump in. Where are these carbon credits made?
The carbon is still made, and you're giving money to who? Because you're not going out there and cleaning up the environment and cleaning up everything that's been done. You're just sending money off to who? The government?
Yeah, that's essentially it.
So it's a way for the government to make money off of us that we still have to do the carbon. We still have to create the carbon, but we're now paying. I've always hated the carbon credits. I just never understood them, apparently.
So the concept is that, yes, I mean, first and foremost, carbon credits, as they've been used, I'm not super enthused about, just because in general, anything that's another financial instrument that doesn't have a lot of clarity, that is especially one that sits on a moral high ground, those to me are the ones that you should give the most skepticism.
Yeah.
Now that said, the underlying concept, and I do think that we should have a breakdown here, and I'd actually like to dig into it in live time, exactly where that money goes line by line. And I'm sure you could figure that out, especially with something like KlimaDAO that's on the blockchain. You can at least track the purchase and sale of the carbon credits, and then that they go where they're supposed to go. But the underlying concept is that when consumers purchase carbon credits from a reputable provider, the money is used for specified projects like planting forests.
Right. Hold on, though. The only reputable, by my estimation, the only reputable provider would be the atmosphere.
Oh no!
Or Earth?
You're thinking so literal right now. You're thinking so literal right now. See, what they're doing, the carbon credits are there. What they're going to be is for the trees they're destroying now. They're planting new ones in the metaverse. See, that's where the carbon credits are going. They're planting digital forests. That's where that's where it's all going, guys. So you just
so
just,
I can get money for my farm in the metaverse.
Exactly.
Metaverse trees. All right, I'm in on this now. I'm ready to go.
Interesting. I really don't understand, Corey. I do poke a lot of fun at carbon credits because the very first person I ever remember talking about them was Al Gore, and I think Al Gore is a caricature of himself. So it's hard for me to understand the concept, because from what I understand of carbon credits, they were just something that was made up by a group of men, or men and women. And they made these carbon credits up and said, well, we're going to sell them. And by buying them, you can offset. So you can be a really bad boy, so to speak. And then you can go out and pollute. As long as you make enough profit to buy these carbon credits for us, then we offset it. And I don't understand them. To me, it's one of the most frustrating things that's come along, because I don't understand how they proposed that they even created these credits to begin with, or what they're doing with the money that they're collecting.
Yeah. So to that point, that isn't something that can clearly be identified, and that's the issue.
Yeah.
So along with KlimaDAO and others, I think the next step for someone who wanted to go down this rabbit hole. And I think that it can be a very virtuous one if done correctly and not just some kind of virtue signal.
Sure.
I think is if you tracked where it actually went.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see that more transparency in that, or more just understanding in that, because to that point, I couldn't say that I know where to click, and I've been looking to see exactly where penny by penny this is actually going.
But
there's a lot of broad concepts, but I can't track down to this goes to this place at this time and this place at this time. This transaction went to here to this firm to do this with the rain to the rainforest here that to this firm.
Sure.
And that.
Sure.
I can't. I mean, perhaps it exists. I'm just not finding it in lifetime.
No. Excuse me. Now, on my solar grid that I have on my house, it's a 10 kilowatt system. I do get like anywhere from $8 to $17 a month back. I'm wondering if that's part of those carbon credits now. I'm going to have to dig into that because it's just a check that they send me that I have no idea why they're sending me that, because they send me a separate check for everything that I sell to the grid that I don't use. And it says green energy on there, so now I'm wondering if that's, wow.
You're earning some carbon credits.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, look at you.
Ooh, yay.
So there's clearly a hole here. If we can't,
what?
In lifetime, figure out where the money is going.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's not going somewhere beautiful, and for that matter, maybe every single penny could be well accounted for, and it's doing everything it should do, and then some. But if the general public can't see that or understand it or know where that place is at, then that's clearly a marketing issue. And if you're going to say, hey, these carbon credits, you should also say, hey, track every single penny here. And there should be a cool website that says, like, in live time, like, you can see every transaction that's flying through, what the carbon credits mean, what it is, the impact of it, how it offsets things. Like, it should be able to break down any and all of these questions.
Sure.
But that was something,
as we're speaking about them.
That was something dreamt up by the government, correct? So it's probably in that 3,500-page dossier about it.
So to that point, I think that, sorry, that, yeah, it's probably at least 3,500 pages.
Yeah.
to that point, I think that if we can, I'm sure there is, and I'd like to believe that there's legitimacy in carbon credits, just because I'd like to believe that something like this, in theory, could work. Perhaps ClimaDAO, maybe we should bring them in and actually interview them and ask them.
That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, because I would like to understand not just how it works specifically on their side of things, but from that point on, like, how can we quantify impact? How can we quantify and verify impact?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, it's very confusing. And anytime something's that confusing, I just look for hidden stuff in it. Like, what are you not telling me? Like, why can't I see this? Why isn't this a clear roadmap to what's going on? So I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it because I can't understand it. Right. And so if I understood it, maybe I wouldn't have such a problem with it.
I think that's most things, which to me seems like the flaw here. Like, if you really wanted to push this forward, I think the education piece would be
Here's my problem with it. Let's just be honest. Do you think they know that there's a messaging problem? Or do you think they think that the whole world just accepts this and understands it for exactly the beautiful thing that it is? Like, they clearly understand it, but they're not interested. You know, when I say they, hell, I don't know who made all this stuff up. But whoever they are, they're not interested in explaining it, right? Because we clearly are willing to look for the answers and willing to hear an explanation for what's going on. And I'm even willing to hear it with an open mind. But to not be given any kind of an explanation or a roadmap or a, you know, something that identifies what's going on with this, to me, that's very confusing. And hell, here's already $400,000 invested in it. You know what I mean? How many billions of dollars are being spent and we don't understand what it's being used for?
Yeah.
So maybe I should drop that in a suggestion box for someone to send us over a little bit of an explanation, right? Because I'm not afraid of saying that we need to protect the environment, right? Like, I'm on board with that. I am an environmentalist by nature, right? I don't litter. I don't dump oil into the ground. I don't dump paint into the ground. And the reason I don't do that is because this is, well, this is my land, right? Like this is where we live. So to think that we're just polluting and just running amok and we don't care, that's not right. But I also would like to have an explanation for it. I think I can understand the big concepts if they will deliver them in a way that we can understand it. I would like to understand it better.
Yeah, I would like to as well too, because I'm on carboncredits.com and Lifetime trying to, and it's just telling me all the things I already know. It's like saying, okay, what's a carbon credit? You know, what's the difference between this and an offset? What overall size of the offset market, which is approaching $1 trillion, by the way. How to produce carbon credits, you know, companies can offset carbon. How do you offset emissions, blah, 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 new revenue. I'm not seeing anything that says tracked where your purchases go. It doesn't say like, okay, here you buy a carbon credit. It goes to this place at this time, to this person who does this thing. And here's the impact.
Yeah.
So I'm not seeing that.
We should make our own carbon credits
about it.
Hey, since this is a little bit of the wild, wild west, let's make our own carbon credits.
You know? I don't want to do that.
No.
Okay. I love the environment and what people don't recognize is that the soil that you stand on is the food that you eat. And right. What I mean by that is that like, it literally is the food. Like how do plants build themselves? Well, mm-hmm. they get the energy to build things from the sun. And of course they need water as part of this process as well too, as all organisms do. The nutrients, like the building blocks, it's like Minecraft, the blocks that it builds itself with are the soil. It's the things mm-hmm. in the soil. So if you've destroyed the soil, if there aren't nutrients in it because you've stripped it, they're unsustainable farming, or if you've put a bunch of toxic stuff in it, that's what you're eating, is the toxic crap. And the same thing happens from the air. It obviously gets in the soil, it gets in the plants, the whole bit. So yes, like you are eating all of that. It is you, it is your kids, it's the people that you care about. So mm-hmm. but at the same time, like I can't think of, I mean, this seems like, let's get in clean it out. I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Here. It's like, let's get a man and be like, all right,
yeah,
explain it to us and then put it on a podcast. And then that way the rest of the world will know. And maybe we'll put up the website where everyone else can kind of
sure,
you know, direct it to.
And
if you
get him in here, Corey, I promise you I'll be nice.
Currently, to me, it honestly sounds more of these credits are fabled beliefs that they're going to fix the environment in the future with no real intentions other than using it as a tax shell currently. Mm-hmm.
Well, I am seeing current projects, and they're saying, like, for instance, avoidance reduction projects. They have, like, renewable energy, and then they have methane capture, and then there's, like, reforestation, and there's direct carbon capture, and they have these big facilities that actually directly capture the carbon. But in theory, though, Malcolm, but I'm not seeing, where's the budget? Like where's the money? Show me the money.
Tangible results. That's all we're looking for.
And instead of buying a carbon credit, why wouldn't you just build a factory that already has better filter systems on their factory that they capture all this stuff anyways, instead of buying a carbon credit and then just polluting the air?
Cheaper.
Yeah. Or a way to push off money and, hey, we don't care. We'll just buy the carbon credits.
Yeah.
We don't really care where that money goes.
Well, to, I mean, hey. Yeah. And see, isn't that a sweet deal to offer to, you know, big oil, right? No, you don't have to retool your plants. No, you don't have to collect any more carbon. Just get some of these carbon credit tokens.
And they look green that way because, hey, we're buying carbon credits. We're helping the earth.
Tomorrow. And, not today. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Or, well, hopefully tomorrow.
Well, I'm just in relative speaking.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully.
We really went off the deep end with the carbon credits, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to have the that Dow come in here and talk to about if they know why they're buying the carbon credits. And they may not, but hopefully they do.
Yeah, well, I bet they would have some sense of at least what their organization is doing with them, right? And what they're doing. I definitely would love to hear what they have to say about it. And because maybe, you know, like you said, Corey, or I don't know if you said this, but maybe intimated, maybe there's just something that we're missing, right? Yeah. Like, where's the missing link here that brings it all together for us to have a clear understanding? Because if we can do something impactful to make a difference on our planet so that our planet is in better condition than when we got it, right? Or so that we fix damage that's been done, I'm all into that. But you can't just do a rug pull on the credits and not show the, like Malcolm said, the proof.
You got to have the puzzle piece that fits.
Somebody does. We just need to find out who does so they can explain it to us.
Yeah.
So we can all be much happier about the carbon credits and be behind it. Yeah. I mean, I have an organic farm. I would love to have carbon credits that I could stand behind and say, yes, here you go. And tell people about, yes, this is a good project.
Yeah. I think to me, the only thing that I would need to see, because I think I understand the rest of it, and I could simplify it, I believe, especially given the opportunity to process and simplify it. The entire concept of carbon credits, why you do carbon credits as opposed to upgrades, although you want to do upgrades, you want to do both because the scales of efficiency of being able to collect the carbon as opposed to being able to the amount of time, money, expense to improve your factories, etc., so on and so forth, at least in the short term. But what I don't see yet, and perhaps I'm just missing it, is I don't see where we can track the money. And that's that to me is it. Like, the money comes in here and then it goes where? Specifically, like $47,124,304.07 went here. And you can see what happened once it did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, yeah,
that piece is conveniently missing.
Well, I mean, it might be somewhere, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. And so I don't want to get stuck on that point. And maybe it's somewhere, and we just don't know, and then we need to share it with the world so everybody can get behind it.
That's all right.
There you go.
That's right. We'll champion their carbon credits as soon as we understand it.
That we will.
Yeah.
So speaking of being champions here, we're going to be coming on to Dow Planet NYC. Just not tomorrow, but the day after. What time slot are we on?
11 to 12, I think. 11:15 to 11:45, 30 minutes.
Eastern, yep.
Eastern, yes.
Now, are we going to be streaming anywhere as we're there?
So we're going to have to, a little bit of that's open to interpret, you know, we're going to have to wait until we get there and see the setup, but presumably, yes, quite a few times. I know that we're going to do a lot of interviews. And we'll get a lot of really good material to be releasing over the coming weeks. But I would assume that we'll be able to be live while we're doing it.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Are we going to communicate that in Discord here for people to let them know where they can find us? Or are we going to do that on our Facebook page? Or
yes. Why don't we do it here in Discord? We don't usually send out a lot of at everyone's, right? Just to not blow everybody's phone up all the time. But we will send that out as it's coming up to that time. And then periodically, I guess you can check in and we'll just come up, bring the stage up. And if there's something exciting going on, we'll broadcast it and we'll record it. Kind of cut it up and give it back to you and let you hear some of what went on up there.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, Phil,
it's going to be a good time. And if anybody would like to come up and join us still, you can still get tickets at dowplanet.nyc. And if you put in DOI20, that's DOI20, you're going to get 20% off. So we would love to see everybody up there. Gentlemen, do you have any parting words?
No, it was great being here. Oh. Thank you for letting me come in.
Yeah, it was awesome having you.
Appreciate the opportunity to come in, seeing you all finally.
Yeah.
Seeing some faces.
Anytime.
See my little girl, how she runs daddy all the time. So it's been my pleasure.
Yeah, and guys, if you don't, if you're not following Malcolm over on Clapper, he does From Crypto and Beyond, and that's every Sunday. You guys kind of team up and do that together, right? Johnny at Crypto and Caviar comes over. I know I've seen Nerdy Nick over there.
Yep.
And they do a really nice show over there. And you do that at 5 Central, correct?
We do that every Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard, 4 p.m. Central.
Okay.
Awesome. Every Sunday evening. We took this past Sunday off for Father's Day, but we'll be right back at it every Sunday, 5 okay. p.m. Eastern Standard, 4 p.m. Central.
Yeah, awesome. So if you guys want to go over there and tune into that, that's something exciting that you can get involved in on Sundays. Corey, do you have anything else we need to say before we wrap up?
No, we just look forward to you joining us in Dow Planet, if not in person, yeah. then virtually.
Yeah, definitely. Well, for the entire gang, we invite you guys to go out and be kind to somebody. It will change their life, and it most certainly will change yours. So until next time, and that's going to be Friday at 8 Central, 9 Eastern, we will talk to you soon. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the DOI Podcast. If you've enjoyed our time together, please rate and review the podcast. Together, we can achieve a brighter future. Help us bring this information to the world by sharing it with friends and family. The DOI Coin, the crypto coin for the people, by the people.